I need more mistakes.
From who? This is the 12th Naman interview recorded on the 25th of November 2010. The Naman interviews are a series of discussions with personalities in the domain of human-computer interaction who have ideas that deserve a closer look. My name is Johannes van der Meulen of Naman, and today we have Denis Javeau of Symbio, based in Liège, Belgium. Thank you, Denis, for coming today.
Thank you, Johannes.
Denis is a human factors and ergonomics specialist. He was previously researcher at the University of Liège for about 12 years on topics such as human and system modeling, design and evaluation methods, and also simulation software. So quite a broad range there. He has published more than 40 papers or book chapters on these topics and is a reviewer, still is a reviewer for many human factors scientific journals and conferences. In tandem with his academic work, he started consulting for Tractable Engineering in the 90s and Airbus in the late 90s, and doing a lot of work on autopilots in particular. Right? In 2002, he met two industrial designers, Patrick van der Straten and Georges Vronen, with whom he started to work on control room design and implementation, and created a company called Symbio later on. And together they have been in charge, these three have been in charge of the design implementation of control rooms for Tractable Engineering, Thales, Belgo Control, Eurocontrol, European Investment Bank, ArcelorMittal, and the Walloon region, CBR, and also Heidelberg. My first question concerns, well, we're going to talk about control rooms, right? So I was wondering how your knowledge and your insight in autopilots, in aircraft, basically, not in cars, right, in aircraft, how this knowledge transfers to control rooms, does it?
Yes, it does, yeah. In fact, one could say that it's the same thing, which is a bit puzzling. But if I start about autopilots, on autopilots, I have had quite a long experience on this topic. I've been working on that since 1995, so nearly 15 years of time. And the longer I was working on the subject, it came to my mind that the problem should be addressed as a cooperative problem. So a problem of cooperation between the crew, which is the pilot and the co-pilot, and the autopilot. And many of the problems well known about the relation between human and automation are in fact cooperation problems. So starting with these ideas, I thought that it would be wise to design autopilots as cooperative systems, and even to go further, to design the system, the man-machine system, which is made of the crew and the autopilot, the three of them, if you want, the co-pilot, the pilot, and the autopilot. They act like a team, and this team is supposed to cooperate. So it's a cooperative man-machine system. Mm-hmm. And this system should be designed as a cooperative man-machine system so that the crew and the autopilot cooperate. This cooperative man-machine system cooperate to achieve some general goal. And in the case of the aircraft, it's to fly the aircraft. And flying the aircraft involves a series of tasks. And these tasks can be allocated to these agents. We call them agents, the crew and the autopilot. So that's the idea that the joint man-machine system made of the autopilot and the crew is in charge of doing something.
Right. So it's sometimes called a joint cognitive system.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. It's a way of describing. So that's the idea that the sum is bigger than the parts. Mm-hmm. And this system achieves something. And that's where I come to control room. It's exactly the same. Control rooms have functions. They have they are in control of an external traffic, for example, like in air traffic control or in vehicle control on the road. You have control room that monitor things or does surveillance. You have control room in charge of decision making, for example, in crisis situation mm. and so on. So the control room can be seen from an abstract point of view as something, a black box if you want, that does something, and it's the function of the control room. And you see the relation with what I was saying about the autopilot. It's the same thing. In the aircraft, the cockpit is made of the crew and the autopilot, and it is doing something. And the control room, it's exactly the same. So the idea also is to design the control room as a cooperative system where you have human operators and where you have machine systems, equipment, and so on, and all of them cooperate to achieve the function of the control room.
And you don't find it difficult to put machine and man on equal footing in such a system?
No.
Difficult? No, I mean, one could question whether that is adequate, appropriate.
I hope. I like it. I as you may know, I don't like the asymmetry of having everything human-centered. Of course, it's important to have everything human-centered, but what I think is important is the system. It's the joint man-machine system, what it does. And if the problem at hand, the problem to solve, the function assigned to the system means that machine has a more important role than humans, then it should be the case. We should not have this type of constraint.
Okay, I understand. Yeah, you just mentioned quite a few different types of control rooms. I know you worked also in financial markets, well, as process industry, and of course ATC. What are the intrinsic differences between, you know, these very diverse types of control rooms?
Yes, there are plenty of differences, but of course there are differences, but on similar dimensions. These control rooms can be characterized along specific dimensions. These dimensions can be categorized into three main categories, which is the functional level, the physical level, and the architectural level. And that's related to a process of designing control room, which is based precisely on these three steps of designing first the functional level, then the material or physical level, and then the architectural level. So for each of them, you have specific dimension, and I think the most interesting one, and that's also related to what I was saying about autopilot and so on, the most interesting one is the functional one. It's really the stage where you specify how the system should work with no clear thinking about its physical instantiation, when the control room will be built. It will be an instantiation of this function and scheme. And on this functional level, I think you have four main dimensions. The first one is the function of the control room. The second one is the external workflow, the exchanges between the control room and the external world. And then you have the agents, man-machine. So you have human agents, which are the operators, and you have machine agents, which are automated systems. So that's the third dimension. And then you have the internal workflow. All those agents work together to perform the function assigned to the control room. So on each of these four dimensions, you have differences. And in my past experience, I've met different types of control rooms with really huge differences on these dimensions. For the control room function, as I said before, you can have control rooms that control something, that does surveillance, decision making, and so on. On the external workflow, you have the degree of interaction between the control room and the external world. You have control rooms with little interaction with the external world. There is only a process which is controlled, which is outside of the control room, but that's all. And on the other end, you have control rooms that control, for example, aircraft, which are very, very far away, and plenty of them. So this makes these two control rooms very different.
Right. And in your experience, is it usual to involve people like yourself, human factors, ergonomics people, in the design of control rooms? And if that, which I suspect and may hope is the case, how are they usually involved, and how do you suggest to do it differently, which I assume you want to do it differently?
It really depends on the domain. There are domains where human factors people are really involved, especially domains where safety is very important. And in these domains, you usually have regulations which imposes or recommends the involvement of human factors specialists. That's, of course, the case in aviation. The cockpit of an aircraft is a kind of control room. And, of course, there are a lot of regulation that imposes or requires the involvement of human factors people. It's nearly the same in air traffic control, in nuclear industry, and so on. So in these domains, really, there is an involvement. And companies such as Boeing, Airbus, or Eurocontrol in air traffic control, they have teams, human factor teams, dedicated to that. It's less the case in less well-funded domains or less high technology domains. In these domains, process control and so on, or I don't know, maritime control and so on,
where the risk is not as dramatic.
Yeah, exactly.
If there is something goes wrong, it's not hundreds at a time that may die, but
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
One at a time.
So exactly.
Like in, for example, healthcare, I guess.
Yes. So the issue there is more performance. You run into the risk of having the disruption of the production because something is not working. The workflow of the control room is not working. And therefore, there is a loss of income, but no loss of life. Mm. And you were asking how I would suggest things to be better than they are now. I think they are already quite good, but I would, of course, like to see involvement in these other types of control rooms. And in all cases, in any case, in all high-tech domain and less high-tech domain, I think the most important thing is to be there very early in the process, in the design process, to be involved from the beginning.
In your writing, you also state that the architecture of the control room comes last and is sort of built around the functions.
That's obvious.
And
it should be obvious.
Yes.
Sadly, it is not. Yes.
Yes. So yeah, in practice, have you ever seen this happen, or do you know of control rooms where this has been the case?
Not in this life. Sadly.
Not yet, huh?
No, but it's, from a logical point of view, it's obvious it should be the case. And the problem is that...
Okay, yes, can you explain why?
Yeah, okay. As I said before, designing a control room has to go to three steps. And the first two steps are functional design and then physical design. And as I said, physical design is really the materialization or embodiment of the functional level. Functional design, functional specification. If there is no building yet and you have no constraint, then you can really design the physical level based on your functional level with little constraints, and you are very likely to be able to satisfy all your functional requirements because you have no architectural constraints. And of course, as is the case in all cases I've met in the past, you have the building and you have to build your control room into the building and to design it inside the building. So you have to cope with constraints, which are, for example, space constraints, dimensions. You may have rooms with columns, you know, which prevents operators to see each other and so on. And so you have to cope with the constraints and you are less likely to satisfy all your functional requirements. And you may end up, you have a client who asks you to satisfy things and you have to come up to him and to say, okay, it's impossible in your architectural settings to do it. It's impossible. So you will have trade-offs and you will have to find alternative solutions.
Thank you very much, Denis, for this recording.
Thanks, Johannes.